Disturbing factors are frequently present in the form of the frightful disparities between excessively rich individuals and groups on the one hand, and on the other hand, the majority made up of the poor or indeed of the destitute who lack food and opportunities for work and education and are in great numbers condemned to hunger and disease. And concern is also caused at times by the radical separation of work from property, by men's indifference to the production. Enterprise, to which he is linked only by work obligation, without feeling that he is working for a good that will be his or for himself. It is no secret that the abyss separating the minority of the excessively rich from the multitude of the destitute is a very grave symptom in the life of any society. This also must be said with even greater insistence with regard to the abyss separating countries and regions of the earth. Surely, the only way to overcome this serious disparity between areas of satiety and areas of hunger and depression is through coordinated cooperation by all countries. This requires, above all, a unity inspired by an authentic perspective of peace. Everything will depend on whether these differences and contrasts in the sphere of the possession of goods will be systematically reduced through truly effective means, on whether the belts of hunger, malnutrition, destitution, underdevelopment, disease, and illiteracy will disappear from the economic map of the earth, and on whether peaceful cooperation will avoid imposing conditions of exploitation and economic or political dependence, which would only be a form of neocolonialism. I would now like to draw attention to a second systematic threat to men in his inalienable rights in the modern world, a threat which constitutes no less a danger than the first to the cause of peace. I refer to the various forms of injustice in the field of the spirit. Men can indeed be wounded in his inner relationship with truth, in his conscience, in his most personal belief, in his view of the world, in his religious faith, and in the sphere of what are known as civil liberties. decisive for this last, is equality of rights without discrimination on grounds of origin, race, sex, nationality, religion, political convictions, and the like. For centuries, the trust of civilization has been in one direction, that of giving the life of individual political societies a form in which there can be fully safeguarded the objective rights of the spirit, of human conscience, and of human creativity, including man's relationship with God. Yet, in spite of this, we still see in this field recurring threats and violations, often with no possibility of appealing to a higher authority or of obtaining an effective remedy. Besides the acceptance of legal formulas safeguarding the principles of the freedom of the human spirit, such as a freedom of thought and expression, religious freedom and freedom of conscience, structures of social life often exist in which the practical exercise of these freedoms condemns men, in fact, if not formally, to become a second-class or third-class citizen. It is a question of the highest importance that in internal social life, as well as in international life, all human beings in every nation and country should be able to enjoy effectively their full rights under any political regime or system. Only the safeguarding of this real completeness of rights for every human being without discrimination can ensure peace at its very roots. With regard to religious freedom, which I, as Pope, am bound to have particularly at heart, precisely with a view to safeguarding peace, I would like to repeat here, as a contribution to respect for man's spiritual dimension, some principles contained in the Second Vatican Council Declaration Dignitatis Humana. In accordance with their dignity, all human beings, because they are persons, that is, beings endowed with reason and free will, and therefore bearing personal responsibility, are both impelled by their nature and bound by a moral obligation to seek the truth, especially religious truth. They are also bound to adhere to the truth once they come to know and to direct their whole lives in accordance with its demands. The practice of religion, of its very nature, consists primarily of those voluntary and free internal acts by which a human being directly sets his course towards God. No merely human power can either command or prohibit acts of this kind, but man's social nature itself requires that he give external expression to his internal acts of religion, that he communicate with others in religious matters, and that he profess his religion in community. These words touch the very substance of the question. They also show how even the confrontation between the religious view of the world and the agnostic or even atheistic view, which is one of the signs of the times, of the present age, could preserve honest and respectful human dimensions without violating the essential rights of conscience of any man or woman living on earth. Respect for the dignity of the human person would seem to demand that when the exact tenor of the exercise of religious freedom is being discussed or determined with a view to national laws or international conventions, the institutions that are by their nature at the service of religion should also be brought in this participation. If this participation is omitted, there is a danger of imposing in so intimate a field of man's life rules or restrictions that are opposed to his true religious needs. The United Nations Organization has proclaimed 1979, the year of the child. In this perspective, we must ask ourselves whether there will continue to accumulate over the heads of this new generation of children the threat of common extermination, for which the means are in the hands of the modern states, especially the major world powers. Are the children to receive the arms race from us as a necessary inheritance? How are to explain this unbridable race? Unbridled race. The ancients said, "Si vis pacem, para bellum." But can our age still really believe that the breathtaking spiral of armaments is at the service of world peace? In alleging this threat of a potential enemy, is it really, nor rather, the intention to keep for oneself a means of threat in order to get the upper hand with the aid of one's own arsenal of destruction? Here too, it is the human dimension of peace that tends to vanish in favor of ever new possible forms of imperialism. It must be our solemn wish here for our children, for the children of all the nations on earth, that this point will never be reached. And for that reason, I do not cease to pray to God each day so that in His mercy He may save us from so terrible a day. At the close of this address, I wish to express once more before all the high representatives of the states who are present a word of esteem and deep love for all the peoples, all the nations of the earth, for all human communities. Each one has its own history and culture. I hope that they will live and grow in the freedom and truth of their own history. For that is the measure of the common good of each one of them. I hope that each person will live and grow strong with the moral force of the community that forms its members as citizens. I hope that the state authorities, while respecting the just rights of each citizen, will enjoy the confidence of all for the common good. I hope that all the nations, even the smallest, even those that do not yet enjoy full sovereignty, and those that have been forcibly robbed of it, will meet in full equality with the others in the United Nations Organization. I hope that the United Nations will ever remain the supreme forum of peace and justice, the authentic seat of freedom of peoples and individuals in their longing for a better future.
On behalf of the General Assembly, I wish to express our deep appreciation to His Holiness Pope John Paul II for his important and inspiring statement. I request the representatives to be kind enough to remain at their seats while the Secretary General and I escort His Holiness out of the General Assembly area, following which the plenary meeting will stand adjourned.
Je vais vous remercier tous. Vous m'avez accueilli d'une manière que je ne pouvais pas prévoir. Je suis très heureux parce que si c'est vrai que le successeur de Pierre doit conforter ses frères et aussi ses sœurs, c'est aussi vrai qu'il est plus capable de faire cela quand il est conforté par ses frères et par ses sœurs. Et c'est une grande confortation que vous m'avez donnée dans ce moment. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to extend my greetings to the representatives on the intergovernmental and non-governmental organizations who are present here, and to thank you for your cordial welcome. Your presence at the center of the United Nations activities is a consequence of the growing awareness that the problems of today's world can only be solved when all forces are joined together and directed towards the same common aim. The problems that the human family faces today may seem overwhelming. I, for my part, am convinced that there is immense potential with which to face them. History tells us that the human race is capable of reacting and of changing direction every time it perceives clearly the warning that it is on the wrong course. You are privileged to witness in this building how the representatives of the nations endeavor to chart a common course in order that life on this planet will be lived in peace, order, justice, and progress for all. But you are also aware that every individual must work towards the same end. It is individual actions put together which bring about today and tomorrow the total impact which is either beneficial or harmful for humanity. The various programs and organizations that exist within the framework of the United Nations Organization, as well as the specialized agencies and other intergovernmental bodies, are an important part of that total effort. In the area of its own specialization, be it food, agriculture, trade, environment, development, science, culture, education, health, disaster relief, or the problems of children and refugees, each one of these organizations makes a unique contribution not only to providing for people's wants, but also to fostering respect for human dignity and the cause of world peace. No organization, however, not even the United Nations or any of its specialized agencies can alone solve the global problems which are constantly brought to its attention if its concerns are not shared by all the people. It is then the privileged task of the non-governmental organizations to help bring these concerns into the communities and the homes of the people, and to bring back to the established agencies the priorities and aspirations of the people, so that all the solutions and projects which are envisaged be truly geared to the needs of the human person. The delegates who draft the Charter of the United Nations had a vision of united and cooperating governments, but behind the nations, they saw also the individual, and they wanted every human being to be free and to enjoy his own or her fundamental rights. This fundamental inspiration must be preserved. I wish to express my best wishes to all of you here who work together to bring the benefits of concerted action to all parts of the world. My cordial greeting goes to the representatives of the various Protestant, Jewish, and Muslim associations, and in a particular way to the representatives of the international Catholic organizations. May your dedication and your moral sense never become blunted by difficulties. May you never lose sight of the ultimate aim of your efforts: to create a world where every human person can live in dignity and loving harmony as a child of God. I am very privileged. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus. Amen. Blessing. I am very privileged by your attitude. Thank you very much. My dear friends of the communications media, it would hardly be possible for me to depart from the United Nations without saying thank you from my heart to those who have reported not only this day's events, but all the activities of this worthy organization. In this international assembly, you can truly be instruments of peace by being messengers of truth. You are indeed servants of truth. You are its tireless transmitters, diffusers, defenders. You are dedicated communicators promoting unity among all nations by sharing truth among all peoples. If your reporting does not always command the attention you would desire, or if it does not always conclude with the success that you would wish, do not grow discouraged. Be faithful to the truth and to its transmission, for truth endures. Truth will not go away. Truth will not pass or change. And I say to you, take it as my parting word to you, that the service of truth, the service of humanity through the medium of the truth, is something worthy of your best years, your finest talents, your most dedicated efforts. As transmitters of truth, you are instruments of understanding among people and of peace among nations. May God bless your labors for truth with the fruit of peace. This is my prayer for you, for your families, and for those whom you serve as messengers of truth and as instruments of peace. God bless you. God bless you, Benedictine.